This is On the Ground IPSY on 89.1 WEMU, your community NPR station. And that word community means an awful lot to us. We love being a part of this community, and we try very hard to tell the stories of this community. And a fault we see a lot in media coverage of especially Ypsilanti, which is where our focus is going to be today, is that people focus on the negatives, the crimes, the, the issues with Eastern, things going around us that draw media attention almost always seem to be overtly negative. So we were excited to partner as the media partner on Concentrate Media's project On the Ground IPSY. And of course, Sarah Rigg is here with me this morning.
Hello.
I'm Patrick Campion, by the way. And she is the project manager. But this is a project focused solely on Ypsilanti, the city, the township, our community.
That's right.
And I think we are in agreement that we really love to focus on people and organizations and, things that are happening here that saying, you know what, yeah, there are problems in our community, but there are so many people trying to do the right thing to lift a segment of the community up or the entire community up with their efforts.
Absolutely. One of our little taglines is that we're telling the stories in Ypsilanti that nobody else is telling.
Yeah, and we love meeting new people, so we have some folks in the studio this morning with us, and we're going to be another interesting story. So introduce it for us. What kind of work did you do this week, Sarah?
I knew about the Telling It program. It's an expressive arts program that takes place at Parkridge Community Center. They've got a couple of other locations where they run it, but Parkridge is one of the most active ones. But I hadn't known a lot of detail until I started talking to the founder, Deb Gordon Gerfinkel. And she approached me at one of the Monday morning community meetings at Parkridge and asked if I'd be interested in writing about a new initiative that they have going through the program, where they're bringing in a couple of spoken word artists, poets, who have experience at, of being formerly incarcerated. To talk with the kids and do a whole year of programming with them that they're hoping will culminate in a show and or possibly like a chapbook of the kids' writing.
Well, welcome, Deb. I heard this this might have been your idea, this Telling It
Good
thing.
Morning, Patrick. Good morning. Thank you so much for inviting us onto your show. We're really happy to be here.
And you don't sound like you're from Ypsilanti originally. Maybe Ann Arbor?
Yeah, really. And a little bit east. Okay. Right. Actually, closer to Ypsi than Ann Arbor. Right. Grew up in London,
great.
England.
Yes. And tell me, why was this important to you? How did you make this happen? How did you turn, a cause into a reality?
So Telling It started locally in 2002, and my background is I'm a specialist in applying the theater arts across curriculum. That was my background in Britain, and I decided many years ago when I lived in San Francisco to apply that skill set to supporting young children who were staying in homeless shelters and really thinking about it from an educational point of view around literacy and developing their literacy skills with the help of expressive arts, multiple expressive arts forms, not just theater. What happened was locally in 2002, the program shifted into the trauma-informed, strength-based, community-based program that it is now, in response to the young people who were engaging in the program, young children from SOS Community Services and teenagers from Ozone House, because they weren't responding to the program as a literacy program. What they were doing is responding to it as a therapeutic opportunity. And so we became a lot more intentional, brought in amazing social workers like Kelly, who we're going to meet in a few minutes, and then starting new initiatives to really meet the young people where they were at therapeutically and in many different ways. And so invited in amazing artists like Cousine, who we're also going to meet soon, to apply their skill set to support not just the mental health of the young people, but also meet their interests through hip hop and spoken word. And in our partnership with Youth Arts Alliance, who now have a recording studio at Parkridge, we really wanted to bring all of this together in this new initiative for the teens at Parkridge.
Right, and you know that when there's a trauma, especially in a young person's life, a lot of it is about a power dynamic. And performance seems to let them take that power back through, carefully processed and selected words and actions. They get to express themselves in a way that I they feel helps put them on a path towards recovery and really fully dealing with how impactful that trauma really was on their lives.
Correct. And what we do as well is we embed many things, like we do a lot of big body games that kind of gets us into our body because that's really important for healthy brain development. We also spend a lot of time embedding spoken word, visual art, a lot of different things happen, sometimes all at the same time, to support so that young people have indirect ways to express and name their hurts, share their stories, and also recognize their strengths and their resilience.
Well, it's a safe way to dip back into that trauma just a little bit, allow yourself to experience it in a safe environment to really start to process the pain.
That's exactly right.
All right, so Cousine, let's meet you now. Shift that microphone over here, and you're one of the artists, also one of the mentors now too.
Awesome, yes, I am.
All right, and so how did you get started with the program?
Well, I got started the program, of course, through Deb. Deb's always a starting point for everything.
Okay.
Deb approached me with the idea, and I loved it. I particularly like the idea of reaching the children where they are. For instance, on our program, and we don't want to drop any contemporary poetry or any even what I call old school poetry that is very unfamiliar to the teens. Instead, we like to approach it from artistic perspectives that they're familiar with. For instance, hip hop, because hip hop is exactly, as we call it, as an acronym form, rhythm and poetry.
Right.
And to show that connection so that the students, or should I say, well, I call them students, so that the children understand that it's not about us pulling them over to us. It's about reaching them part way.
Well, right? You're right away, you're getting their ear when you're saying, you know, that music you listen to every day, that's a form of this spoken word art. And once that clicks that, oh, maybe this is okay. Maybe I feel other people using this to express their pain, their sorrow, their joy, whatever. You know, maybe then it's cool. You know, you get the quote fingers, cool.
Right.
Kids still calling these things cool these days? I don't know. It seems like that's kind of my idea,
either.
Right? All right. So how did you were a participant in this first before you... how did you make your way through this? How did you, you know, find a way to express yourself in this program?
In the program in particular, so I'm already a poet. It's still weird to say that, but I'm already a published poet, and I teach a couple of classes, at university, and I also edit a literary review we have called the Michigan Review of Prisoner Creative Writing, and so through that, just how Deb kind of approached me.
What's your background? I mean, how did you get interested in creative writing?
I actually got interested in creative writing while incarcerated.
Okay.
So I did 20 years of incarceration. Around my 10th year in, I got familiar with the Michigan Review, and I submitted, and I was in there successfully for 11 volumes.
Were you self-taught, or did you learn while you were there?
Well, yeah, because inside there aren't curriculum, right? There's no curriculum. Yeah. And there's no curriculum, and there's hardly an access to any contemporary poetry. So you kind of have to go through television and music and kind of finding your way to understand what written forms are, and through an old book, an old Keats book or something like that, kind of.
Yeah, you did 20 years. I mean, that's a long stretch. You probably can speak firsthand about the mental space that you were in. And can you talk a little bit about the difference from before you discovered creative writing to after?
Well, the obvious is the cathartic release.
Okay.
Something that that's why we like so many different art forms, whether we're proficient in them or not, right?
Right.
Helps us process, helps us get through, helps us kind of attach significant moments in our lives, right, to anchor them. So the same was with me. But in that environment in particular, the writing and having the kind of understanding that this is a creative outlet I am using that strictly comes from within me and has validation and value, that was something different in particular that the review did for me.
Right.
And so I understood Deb's approach in having, like, for instance, a chat book. When someone sees their writing, they see someone that's taken their writing seriously and has formatted in a way to present it, that means a lot to you as an individual. And
it's a way to find yourself a way outside the walls. You know, your physical body's incarcerated, but your brain can still be very free.
Exactly.
So when you got out, I mean, how did you just immediately bounce back to Deb and want to this passion to continue? I mean, how did you make the transition?
Actually, when I was first released, I hadn't known Deb.
Okay.
It wasn't until I worked for the Prison Creative Arts Project, and that's how Deb and I met.
And now you're bringing the two together a little bit. So what's your passion now? I mean, you're working with these students. You know, how are you relaying your personal experience to them to help them feel a way to a new way of expressing themselves?
I think the main thing I try to do is let them know that even though they may have behaviors or conditions that they're trapped in that seem to be, or not seem to be, but that are not beneficial for them, it doesn't mean something's wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. I think that's why this idea of reaching out to them instead of saying, hey, you have to come where I am in order to be good, to be right, to understand that just because you are somewhere does not necessarily mean you are inherently wrong or inherently unvaluable.
Well, they probably feel a lot of that same trapped feeling that you felt while you were on the inside, that, you know, if you're 15 and you're a victim of abuse and, you know, you're homeless, I mean, that... You feel like your life is at a wall.
Yeah, you get yourself caught in the cycle unaware of it, right?
Right.
You're being pushed into a cycle, and then you play that cycle out unaware of it, completely unaware.
All right, we're going to talk to you for a second more. I have lots of questions for you. I'm super interested in this. But Kelly, I wanted to introduce you to. What's your role here?
So I am the social worker for the teen group right now at Park Ridge.
All right. So what's your primary purpose and what's your involvement in this project? How do you kind of bring the two together?
So my primary purpose within the space is to be a support figure for the site facilitators, Cozy and Winnie's taken over with the art projects, spoken word. And
you're the day-to-day familiar face for the teens.
Yeah.
And then you're the bridge to when they bring in guests to help.
Absolutely. Right. And then also just to be a person on the ground to help with some of the processing that's going on. Mm-hmm. If an individual needs a bit more emotional support, something, you know, pretty intense can come up with some of the games that we play, some of the activities that we do, and sometimes we want to make sure the teens are okay.
You don't want them to feel like they have to hold it back.
Yeah.
And that there is support. And I was, you know, I'm thinking about that while Cozine was talking, that, you know, this can drive big emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these kids have very big emotions that they've never really dealt with in their lives. And, you know, even I'm 42 and I still have problems dealing with big emotions. But at that age, your brain's still developing, especially victims of trauma. Man, that's tough.
Absolutely.
So it kind of sounds like you're there as that almost like a life preserver in some ways, that if something goes on, they can come to you and know that they've got that, that ear and that safe space. But it's also a place where they can express these feelings.
Absolutely. And, we want to be a safety net for them. Also, as you talked about, a lot of times when individuals are going through traumatic events, they feel like their power has been taken away. So in allowing them to reframe their own story, write it as they wish, retell it, you know, even change events if they want to. We want to be there to allow them that safe space of expression and allow them to reclaim their own power and their own retelling.
And how are you seeing the work that Deb's organization, that Cozine has done within this group that you're the social worker for? How are you seeing that help them process and move forward and change and maybe smile and find a little bit of happiness?
Yeah, I think a lot of times experiences of trauma can be completely all-encompassing and it becomes a really defining moment in an individual's life. And with a lot of the traumatic processing that's done within telling it within a safe space, a lot of the individuals can sort of move past the traumatic events by reclaiming their own story, going through the process of retelling, because with traumatic events, there's a lot of issues with memory.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, your amygdala is having issues capturing those memories. So when you're retelling it, you're sort of telling your brain in a safe space how to remember a certain event.
Well, your brain's trying to protect you in
exactly.
many ways from stopping you from re-experiencing that trauma over and over again.
Absolutely.
And you've got to learn to process that and move through it, and as you're saying, in a safe space and as a team. And that's tough work.
Mm-hmm.
That is hard work. And it sounds like this is a nice tool to help them along that path.
Absolutely, yeah.
What's, you know, without divulging individual stories or anything, are you seeing it, you know, like anecdotally, is there a person or persons that you're seeing that this is really helping them thrive and maybe even sparking an interest that they might want to follow Cozine's path and do this professionally, you know, be published?
I think we've got quite a few that there's potential there.
Awesome.
Or,
you know, use it to form music or other forms of art, too.
Yeah, there's quite a few various ways that the teens enjoy expressing themselves, which is another reason that a diverse approach to the different arts we take is so great, because some teens love speaking. Some teens love writing. Some teens love singing, there's painting, and, you know, it's all about finding what works for that individual teen. We have seen a couple students, I would call them in this respect, really take off. And one young lady in particular had a lot of issues in school and I think really was given an opportunity to showcase her own intelligence, power, prowess, all of that within our space, not necessarily the contemporary or traditional school setting. So we've really seen her take off in particular. And she continues to go through a lot of really intense moments in her life. But we've seen her claim a lot of her power. We've seen her do a lot of self-determination. There's a lot of expression of who she is as an individual, and really being confident in that. And that's really amazing to see.
I do want to point out, you know, that what you're doing at Park Ridge, this isn't normal. It should be. I mean, to be honest with you, from the expressions that you're giving of, you know, how much this is helping, especially the younger residents and the community as well. But this is by far no way the norm for those living in subsidized housing, or we used to call them the projects and things of that nature. It's not normal for this to be offered, and it happens with great partners. I know Eastern has a good partnership with Park Ridge, but you know, people like Dev stepping up and providing the resources, just even if it's just in the sweat equity to make something like this happen. And it takes people like you, Cozine, too, to really step up and be a mentor for these kids. You know, we talk time and time again about that kids don't see a lot of paths when they're growing up in these environments. And it's not a white thing or a black thing. It's a poor thing more than anything else. It's really hard to step out of the intergenerational cycle of poverty. So it sounds like you're giving them this step up. You mentioned you're a published poet now, Cozine, and the prison review, the Michigan Prison Review, is that the name
Michigan
of the
Michigan Review of Prisoner Creative
Okay, and you're involved with that
as a managing editor.
What are you seeing? I think that what I'm feeling is a lot right now is that prisoners have a certain, you know, stereotype that they're uneducated, that they're being punished, that they're there for a reason. I mean, it sounds like you would have a firsthand glimpse at so much hope and beauty and light and deep feelings from these men and women that are behind bars.
Well, definitely. You know, it's funny because this brings to mind something my co-teacher, Becca Pickett, said. And it was, at the time, the context was really important, but it reaches outside of context even. And that's that we're trying to give people, one thing we're trying to allow people is the privilege to fail, right? Oftentimes, we don't realize that as being something that's important, right? When you're in particular demographics, failure is not really an option. Mm-hmm. The stakes are already so high against you that failure pretty much erases you from the playing board, from the game board, right? It doesn't just put you back at start.
Right. You got to be alpha or nothing.
Exactly. And so what we try to do, at least what I love about the telling in particular and PCAP in particular, is that the goal is to allow that space for growth. And being a youth in a correctional facility or in system involved at all, you don't really have much of that space. And when it's given to you in such stark ways, you're not really expected to succeed. There's not enough resources. Like you said, that sweat equity becomes really important.
Right.
You don't even throw money at something so much before. You need to have someone actually there. You need to make actual connections with the youth so they understand you're not here just collecting a check. You're not here for some temporary gain that will pad your CV or what have you, and you'll be going off, right?
Right. And I'm just curious, you know, you mentioned from yourself, your own personal experience of getting published and seeing your words leave, you know, and go out to the world was very important to you while you were incarcerated. Yeah. You know, how do you choose what to publish and what not to? I mean, how gut-wrenching is it for you to I mean, do you provide constructive feedback to people and say, you know, if you focus on this area, maybe we'll consider you? How do you deal with that?
Well, I think what makes our review in particularly special is that we focus on making better writers.
Okay.
Actually publishing the book and getting it out there, we love to do that because it allows more voice for our writers, but we want to make sure that what we do is provide great critiques and feedback to our writers that are unaccepted, that are not accepted. Right, those, ironically enough, we really care a lot about them, right? Because we have many success stories where people have submitted 1 year, got feedback, came back using that feedback and were accepted.
Right, and you're right. There's not people guiding them on this writing process for the most part.
No, they're by themselves in a correctional setting trying to figure out a way to make it work.
Well, I'm sure that universally, you know, critique is tough, but at least it's a response.
Oh, definitely.
It's an interaction with somebody outside those walls.
Definitely. It's something to help you improve.
And how do you parlay that? I mean, do you use these voices when you're working with kids to show them that, you know, even people that are physically locked up can still have hope and still see outside their circumstances?
Well, definitely. I think it's important. I think showing hope is very great, but also showing success is even better, right? That gives someone something solid.
Well,
to
you're embodying success every time you step in front of these kids. You know, obviously your life was on a very different path than it is now. And, you know, turning that into a good for the community, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's never too late. You know, no matter how bad it is for them, it's never too late. They can see that they can make big screw-ups and still come back.
Exactly.
Deb, I wanted to ask you, I'm sure that always when our audience, there's people listening that are going, you know, how do we find out more about this? How do we help this? How do we support? How do we get involved? You know, there's a lot of very smart, intellectual people in our community, too, that love to serve. So how do people find you, and how do they get more involved in this?
So, thanks to the University of Michigan, and Cozine was alluding to that because the Prison Creative Arts Project comes out of the University of Michigan, the residential college, and so does Telling It,
okay,
where I also teach. And so We do have support from them, but it's not enough. It's never enough because we are a program that's always in an expansion mode because we want to serve more and more young people. Right. And as a quick sidebar, Patrick, I just wanted to say that some of our young people are actually doing really, really well.
Great.
And not everybody's coming in traumatized.
Sure.
And coming out of jail and all kinds of stuff. That some of them are really, they're struggling maybe with microaggressions at mm-hmm. schools or in the neighborhoods or in social media or in media. The way that they're represented kind of is in tension with who they intrinsically are. So we really do serve every young person. And they don't have to have been in some kind of trauma, although a lot of young people have experienced some level of trauma. But so we're always looking for our partnerships to support us, funding. We're always looking for donations, and people can go to our website, which is lsa.umich.edu/tellingit.
Okay. And you don't have to remember all
right.
that.
It's in the story.
Right, we're going to link over to it so you can find it at Sarah's work. You can find it at WEMU.org. Deb, from your own personal experience, I mean, how has this changed your life? You have 10 seconds to tell me. No, seriously, how has this impacted you personally to see this growth and this change and these smiles on these kids and others?
So I've had to do a lot of waking up and growing as a white middle-class woman who's not from America. I'm constantly on a learning curve and trying really hard to take more and more of a back seat while people like Kelly and Cosine and others are really on the front line from the communities, reflecting the young people closer in age with all kinds of amazing skills. And my biggest high is when I can be a fly on the wall watching the magic happen. I am at my most happy at that moment, because then there's an alchemy that happens that I don't see in any other sphere in my life.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today, Deb. Cosine, thank you for the work you're doing, and Kelly, certainly you too with the social work with the kids. I have 5 teenagers at home. I know the struggle to a degree, so you know, appreciate all you're doing in our community, and we hope to hear more from you. And we hope this turns into, you know, this big performance thing. Sarah, you alluded to that.
Right, yeah. I think that's really exciting. I hope that they do get their writing published and that there's some kind of show that comes out of it. I think that would be awesome. I also just wanted to make sure that we name check Asia Johnson,
okay,
who is
right.
the other person, the other poet who's working with the program. She wasn't able to be here on the air today, but I did want to make sure that her name was included because she's a big part of it too.
Yeah, thank you. And pictures with Doug again this
yeah.
week of the, you know, maybe some smiling.
Yeah, he wasn't expecting it to be such an action shot because Deb talked about the big body games
right.
that they play. He thought he was going to go in there and going to be doing a little theater, a little bit of poetry, and these kids running around and breaking chairs. They broke a chair, yeah.
All right, so you can see pictures of that. All right, and what do you have coming up for us next week, Sarah?
I found out about a church in Ypsilanti Township that is doing some really innovative nonprofit programming. And the it's not too dissimilar from the story we did a few weeks back about the CFLC in Ypsilanti Township. Same thing, where a church has a nonprofit arm that does good works in the neighborhood. But the thing I thought was interesting about this is that they're doing it out of a former Willow Run school building. A lot of those have just been torn down and they're no longer the center of the neighborhood. But these folks found a way to repurpose an old school and do a lot of wonderful programming for the neighborhood
right.
out of it.
I have lots of questions and my brain's going to be spinning for a week here, but we'll happily join you for that next week. So thank you to everybody that was here today, and thank you to you for listening to and supporting 89.1 WEMU FM and HD1 Ypsilanti.